This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Times Like Now is an interview program. Interviews with interesting people that are doing cool stuff. My name is Trevor Collins, and past episodes can be found wherever you get your programs. The month of October has been called Striketober, as organized labor around the country has taken to the picket line. Today I'm speaking with Josette Yaramillo. She is president of the Colorado AFL-CIO on today's episode of Times Like Now. Hello, Josette. How are you this evening?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm really well, and I do appreciate your time. Thank you for joining me this evening on the show.
Absolutely. I think anytime I get the opportunity to talk about the great working people of Colorado, I'm happy to do it. So thanks for having me on.
Yes, absolutely. So you and I, and hopefully everybody else listening, knows that October was nicknamed Striketober. You heard this, I'm sure.
I have, yeah. Sorry, I'm nodding my head, and I forget that this is going to be formatted for audio, so your listeners can't tell that, yes, I'm enthusiastically nodding my head. It's certainly, we have seen a lot of action across the country for striking, and certainly something that has been coined Striketober. So lots of worker action happening all across the country.
So in your position as president of the AFSCME, and for anybody else, what is that alphabet soup?
So it's AFSCME, which isn't really a real word, but is certainly part of my normal everyday vocabulary. It's the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And then I'm also the president of the Colorado AFL-CIO. And that is the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations.
Right. That's a mouthful anytime.
It is.
So again, a little catch up for folks that may not know. 10,000 New York taxi workers, a couple were on a hunger strike. And I guess that has come to an end. De Blasio has agreed to pay off their taxi cab token debts. So there's no longer anybody hunger striking over this. But over 1,000 Alabama coal workers striking for better wages and safer conditions, Amazon workers, we have teachers and strikers all over the country. What is your take? I mean, do you think COVID had something to do with this, with the curtain being pulled back on maybe political or corporate corruption? Or what is your take on all of this?
Absolutely.
Because it is rather new.
Yeah, no, I think that's a perfect question. And what we have seen is that COVID has really opened the curtain is a perfect way to describe that. I always say that it lifted the veil on worker safety issues, on worker pay, on a lot of the things I think that we thought were normal. Like my 9-to-5 is, I work for child welfare for the county here in Colorado. And we've always gone into the office. Did we have to go to the office? No, it turns out we didn't. I think we have seen a lot come out of COVID, like the Great Resignation, and I will use that in air quotes because I know that's kind of a popular term for folks, just being able to really decide what work environment worked best for them, be able to really say, you know, I deserve a living wage. I'm not going to work for poverty wages. I don't want to work 2 and 3 minimum wage jobs just to make ends meet. And we've really seen kind of this worker uprising where folks and workers are kind of able to write their own ticket, which is an incredible thing to happen and to see on our end. And then really starting to see corporations raise their minimum wage because they can't get folks at, you know, the minimum wage. Minimum wage in Colorado is $12 an hour. But even that is really a poverty wage for folks living, you know, in our metro area where housing costs are just astronomical.
Yes, even at $15 an hour, a full-time job is approximately $30,000 a year. I don't see that as a big ask for a lot of corporations when the cost of living and the cost of rent is supposed to be a third of your monthly take. Well, we all know rents have skyrocketed and this is not sustainable for people. So yeah, I think there's definitely been a line drawn in the sand, so to speak. Now, I heard recently an interview with one of the Alabama coal miner folks. I don't know if he was a president or if he was just a Joe on the line, but he said it's not about the money. It's never been about the money. They were willing to negotiate and talk about money. What he wanted was time to see his family. What's been your take on that with people working so long? Some people working on Saturdays, some people working Amazon workers 7 days a week, that sort of thing.
Well, it is certainly something that the labor movement has continually fought for, right? The 5-day work week, the 40-hour work week. I guess I shouldn't say the 5-day work week, but certainly the 40-hour work week. And really looking how that breaks down, right? 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for recreation, 8 hours for work. And that's how that kind of splits up. But it is really important. And I think, you know, when we're looking at folks who, whether you work in a coal mine or whether you work for the Department of Human Services or, you know, you're a doctor or whatever industry you work in, time with your family, time to yourself, you know, however you define family, you don't have to have kids and a spouse. It could be spending extra time with your friends or spending extra time with your animals. That time is really important. And I think this whole stay-at-home orders and working from home, I think really highlighted that for a lot of folks. It showed the importance of family and spending time. I think we got used to, in the last 18 months or almost 2 years, we've really gotten used to being home and spending more time with our loved ones. And the work is still getting done. So I think there's a lot of pushback from that. But certainly I think being able to spend time with the people that you care about is important. Those are things that folks are not willing to sacrifice. Those are not negotiables. We can sit down and talk about wages, but you can't put a price on the time that I get to spend with my family.
Now, how did you get into, speaking of family, how did you get into this position within the unions?
I like to tell people that I tripped and fell into it. But really, I think when I look back at my life and I look back at my family, my dad was a self-employed mechanic. My mom was a self-employed barber. They didn't make a ton of money, but my family certainly comes from a really strong union background. Pueblo, Colorado is the home of the steel mill. It started off as CF&I, then went to, you know, Oregon Steel, and now it's Evraz. But my grandpa was a worker there. He worked in the coke plant, and he was a member of the United Steelworkers Local 2102. My godfather, my uncle, was also a member of that same local. I have two uncles who are butchers with the United Food and Commercial Workers. And it's always just been a value of our family that you respect unions. So when I got a job at the Department of Human Services, it was a union job, and I signed up and got involved. And I think I run into like some old elementary school teachers every now and then, because they're retirees and they're involved in their unions, and they tell me that I have taken to unionism and the labor movement like a duck to water. And they said it was because that they could never shut me up in elementary school. So it completely makes sense that I am in this position to be able to talk to people for a living. So I don't know if it's just part of who I am, but it is certainly something that I fell into, and I really love, and I enjoy the opportunity to talk to people. I like talking to workers. I like talking to people like yourself, and any opportunity I get to talk about workers, I'm all for it.
Have you been there in Colorado to the John Deere strike that's currently going on?
I have not made it up to the John Deere strike that's going on in Colorado yet. I'm in Pueblo, which is about 2 hours south of Denver, and then I also work a full-time job. So my schedule's a little limited in getting up there, but I have been getting updates from our folks on the line. We don't have a huge membership base at John Deere because we have the manufacturing the parts section of the John Deere factory here in Colorado. But we have seen a huge turnout from a lot of our affiliates. I know I will speak in acronyms, so if you want me to break any of those down, you just let me know. SEIU, IBEW, UFCW, our teachers' unions, lots of other folks have been out there to support. They've had a really good turnout. So it's been really strong for them.
Yeah, I understand that John Deere was using the courts to try and stop picketers, and the corporations have been using tactics forever to stop union building. Now, this has something to do with, I think, that the 40 years of skyrocketing CEO salaries and corporation profits has really made it clear what their priorities are, putting workers at risk. What's your take on this, and what is being done to encourage? I know unions memberships were down for many, many years, but there has been a return, or slowly becoming one. Are you involved in that? How is the team building going in your circles?
Absolutely. So organizing has always been a top priority for us to start to grow union membership. I think that the tide has changed. I like to make a joke about this because, you know, our popularity has risen, you know, in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. It's obviously intentional. Like, we want people to like unions and to understand what unions are and what we do. But I say, you know, our popularity is right up there with puppies, which is really good. Everybody loves puppies. We want everybody to love the labor movement. But, you know, to your point about corporations using the courts and writing rules in their favor, absolutely. We've been dealing with that since the 70s, right? The air traffic controllers is when kind of that breakdown of unions started. But we're turning the tide slowly. I think we're working really hard to work with our friends in the legislature to talk about how we can level the playing field for workers. In Colorado, we passed collective bargaining for our state employees. So they actually were granted a seat at the table a couple years ago and just negotiated their first contract. And we did that through legislation and a lot of hard work from our state employees union, Colorado Winds, and their executive director, Hillary Glasgow. We're also looking at public sector collective bargaining this year in the legislature, And that will affect, you know, my union and allow us to bargain for wages and benefits and, you know, have a seat at the table. So when things are kind of going awry, like they have been with COVID and, you know, we have folks still in people's homes. We have throughout the entire pandemic. We have an opportunity to have a seat at the table and really talk about what those working conditions are like and how we can increase safety. And we can talk about hazard pay. We can talk about benefits, all of those things. So we're really working that angle and working with, you know, our friends in the legislature. Nationally, we're looking at passing the PRO Act. The PRO Act would kind of every state has different rules for how you negotiate, how you form a union. The PRO Act would kind of make everybody the same. Like, here's how you form a union in whether you're in Idaho or you're in Colorado and Alabama or California. You know, the rules are the same. And I think that really levels the playing field for working folks. So I hope I answered your question. I feel like I went on a long tangent about that.
No, that's okay. It's great information, and I do appreciate it. I was going to bring up the issue that has come up recently down in, well, I would just say Hollywood, but it was actually in New Mexico with Alec Baldwin's movie, where unfortunately a camera person was shot and killed with a live round in a gun. Now, we know that IATSE, that is the Union for Film and Stage Actors, had some issues. They were very close to going to strike for being pushed to work too many hours, too long hours, not enough time in between, all these things that IATSE was pressing for, and they ended up making a resolution and did not go to strike. But I know that this case in revolving around this movie, some of the camera people left that movie production because of their unsafe conditions that were going on, and they brought in non-union work to fill in and to keep the production of the movie going. This is just an example of how corners are cut, how safety precautions are skirted, and how people are hurt in whether it be a coal mine or whether it be a film set, for instance. Are you familiar with incidences like this? Do you see this happening around you? What has been your experience in this safety issues and towards the union?
So I would tell you that every industry, whether it's IATSE, you know, our stagehands, our camera folks, you know, SAG-AFTRA, who are, you know, our actors and radio folks, if it's our electricians, I always forget to mention LIUNA because they show up and they're amazing. Those are our contractors, our laborers. All of their contracts are so specific about safety, and everybody has different rules. I really think that union members are the top line in safety and professionalism and knowledge. I've toured lots of apprenticeship programs where, you know, they're teaching folks the correct way to install plumbing, or the correct way to build houses or install electricity. They really have top of the line contracts that really outline all of the procedures that need to be followed to make sure that our workers stay safe, but not only the workers, to make sure that things are built correctly. I bought a house that had a lot of work done recently, and you know, it's incredible when you're like, oh, well, this wasn't done great. I might have to redo this, or, you know, I have to do this, or I have to do that. Those are kind of like the bottom line of, you know, taking pride in your work, doing it correctly, and making sure that the workers on that job are safe while they're doing that job. That's the reason why we negotiate our contracts. And every industry, every area of work that we have unionized has strong contracts to talk about those kinds of things.
The most recent, I guess, the reputation of the unions has not always been good. there is corruption, or was corruption, and that can happen in anything. The corruption of, let's say, the 1970s and bad Las Vegas situations and mob movies that you've probably seen and know about. Was this propaganda? I mean, there really was a, you know, a lot of corruption. There really was a Jimmy Hoffa. There really was a lot of these things that went on in this time. But has that obviously reputation changed, or is it changing? Is that what was part of the lack in membership for so long?
You know, I certainly hope so. Is it propaganda? Sure. Like, do we hear about the amazing things that unions do for working people in like our school curriculum? Not at all. Right behind me, you see my Ludlow picture. And for your listeners, Ludlow is a mining site that is about 70 miles south of where I'm located right now. That's pretty close to where I'm at. I didn't learn a single thing about Ludlow growing up in middle school and in high school. It was a pretty big massacre. Women and children, you know, died during that massacre. The National Guard was involved. Lots of different folks, you know, going on strike. Didn't really hear about that. So is it propaganda? Of course. I remember a couple of years ago, our Denver Area Labor Federation put out shirts that said union thug. And it was a kind of like a take back the night thing. The younger generation really liked it. But I do remember getting some sideways glances from some of our older folks, some of our retirees who didn't understand why we would happily call ourselves union thugs, because we're not thugs. You know, I just got approved for foster care to take care of bottle-fed kittens. You know, we're certainly not thugs, and not in the way that I think we've been portrayed for a long time in the media. But I think there is a concerted effort to really talk about who we are and the work that we do, because, you know, we're just workers who want a seat at the table and want a voice in the job. But I really think that, you know, going back to COVID and kind of lifting that veil, I really think that our communities saw how hard we were fighting for our workers. And that kind of brings to light that, you know, we're not strangers. We're not, you know, just some random people who come into your city and want to create havoc. You know, in Greeley, the meatpacking plant, you know, and folks testing positive and folks dying, those are people's friends. Those are people's family. Those are people's neighbors. So I think, you know, the more we can talk about our successes and the hard work that we do, I think the more that folks will come around and understand that we're not some thugs. You know, they won't give me a billy club and let me beat up people. I'm not that sure.
Well, no, of course. This is definitely a past chapter in the union experience. But you brought up a point. How has the unions, at least in your knowledge, responded to COVID? Have they been forefront in vaccine and masking and quarantine?
We were and have been on the forefront of that fight against COVID, against really talking about worker safety. I know in my workplace, I'm really blessed to have a national union that, you know, put out lots of information, lots of toolkits, lots of best practices. And we were meeting with our management when this first started, and our directors almost every week, almost every day I was on the phone with them, really talking about safety measures that we could put in place. You know, who in our department needs to go home first, because we just didn't have the equipment for a lot of our folks to work from home. We were on the forefront of really talking to the government, the governor, and talking about who is essential during this time. How do we classify essential? And how many of our folks does this affect? So we certainly have been on the forefront of that and continue to be. So we are still running vaccine clinics. We're still working with the state to get, you know, they have a mobile bus that does vaccines. We brought them down for AFSCME members and state employees to get their vaccines. So yeah, we have been and we continue to be.
That's good to hear. One more kind of a some people's opinion of union labor talk about the high cost of union labor. And some have said that unions even destroy industries like the garment industry, for instance. What do you say about the high cost of union labor to what it does to products, for instance, in the States?
So I certainly hear that. And I think as a consumer, as a homeowner, sure, you want to get a good price on things. But if I pay to get my floors done and I do it at the cheapest possible price, and then I got to do it over again in a year, am I really getting the lowest possible price? So that's an example from my own life. But we certainly see things that are built union last a lot longer because it's really quality craftsmanship. Is union labor expensive? Yes. But part of that is because unions pay a living wage. They pay for benefits. They pay for retirement. So when we're looking at the impact of the community that those folks have, it's positive. Like, they're contributing to their community. They're buying cars. They're buying houses. They're paying taxes, which for me as a public worker, I'm like, yes. I love that. Like, pay property taxes because that goes into our general fund. So all the way around, like, you're getting quality work, and we're making sure, especially for those government contracts, that we're paying the folks who are doing that a living wage, and that money is staying local and kind of recirculating in our communities.
Yeah, that's the ideal when you buy local, when you support local. Proud to hear it. Glad to hear it. Unions gave us weekends. Unions gave us lunch breaks and safety measures that corporations we know would not and do not. I think we should all tip our hat to you and to union workers all around the country. 7 days, 7 day work weeks used to be a real thing, didn't it?
Yeah. And child labor laws and things like the Fair Labor Standards Act. And, you know, we keep pushing for that. We keep pushing for, you know, maternity leave and sick days and higher minimum wage. So those are the kind of things that we're still fighting for. The optics just look a little different, but I think the general situation is still the same, right? We're still pushing for things to be fair and people to be paid what they're
President Biden's Build Back Better, and the PRO Act is protecting workers to organize, protecting union to organize. What's your views on Biden's moves with the union?
You know, it has been a long time since we've had a president who so proudly talks about union workers and union labor. He's not afraid to say union, and he's not afraid to, you know, come and talk to our folks and kind of learn what we do. I would say that Joe Biden is one of the stronger candidates and one of the more pro-labor presidents that we've had in quite some time.
I'm glad to hear that, and I hope it does well for you and your position, as well as your brothers and sisters within your unions there in Colorado. Josette Yaramillo, I really do appreciate your time on the show today and tonight, and keep up the good work as always.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Like I said, I love to talk about workers and working people, what's going on in Colorado. I can do this all day. It is really one of my favorite parts of this elected position.
AFSCME, as well as AFL-CIO, Josette, thank you again for your time tonight.
All right, you are welcome.
Past episodes of Times Like Now can be heard wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to the letter J. Cody Robertson for original music. My name is Trevor Collins, and I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. I do appreciate your emails, and as I'm approaching my one-year anniversary of the program, please do write me and let me know what you think of the show and if you have suggestions for people that I might interview. Thank you once again, and I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
I am Dr. Demento. I am here in a land of happy, freaky people. KBOO Portland.
Andy Wawo looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Wawo, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer Carl Bauer. His show Private Fears is on now at Blue Sky Gallery through November 26th. All the images are available at carlbauer.com, Carl with a C. And there's a discussion he hosted also available on Blue Sky Gallery's website. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Carl.
Thanks for having me, Joseph.
So you and I met in Blue Sky last week when the show opened. It was really one of the most amazing portrait shows I've seen there for a long time. There was something incredibly orderly about everything.